Can't judge a dollar. I would have used one penny, but we don't make the pennies anymore. We save money. Can't charge $1 to any country under IEPA. Not $1. I assume to protect other countries. This must have been done to protect those other countries, certainly not the United States of America, which they should be interested in protecting. That's what they're supposed to be protecting. But I am allowed to cut off any and all trade or business with that same country. In other words, I can destroy the trade. I can destroy the country. I'm even allowed to impose a foreign country-destroying embargo. I can embargo. I can do anything I want, but I can't charge $1. Because that's not what it says. And that's not the way it even reads. I can do anything I want to do to them, but I can't charge any money. So I'm allowed to destroy the country, but I can't charge them a little fee. I could give them a little two-cent fee, but I cannot charge under any circumstances. I cannot charge them anything.
This is my video update on this Saturday afternoon, February the 21st, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the Supreme Court ruling against Trump's tariffs. Not all of Trump's tariff policy, but a part of Trump's tariffs. The Supreme Court ruled that Trump cannot use tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the IEEPA. That is the ruling from the Supreme Court. So they did not strike down all of Trump's tariffs, his entire tariff policy, just tariffs under this this specific act. And it's a loss for Trump, no doubt about it. It is a humiliating loss for Trump. He was not happy with the Supreme Court's ruling. But what he is going to do is he is going to simply pivot away from tariffs under this specific statute, and he is going to place tariffs using a different law. He's actually already picked out the act that he is going to now use to impose tariffs. He is going to use the Trade Act of 1974. That's going to be his pivot away from the IEEPA. And he is now going to move to the Trade Act of 1974. The Supreme Court ruling could mean that the U.S. will now face $150 billion in potential tariff refunds. I'll get to that in a bit, what that means. But the Supreme Court invalidated tariffs imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, but did not strike down all of President Trump's tariffs, as those under other statutes, for example, Section 232 and 301, remain in effect. So Trump already announced a 10% global tariff. So he announced that yesterday. He announced that he's going to now operate under the Trade Act of 1974. So he announced that as well. He said that the Supreme Court did not overrule tariffs. They merely overruled a particular use of IEEPA tariffs. Trump told reporters, now I'm going to go in a different direction, probably the direction that I should have gone the first time. Yeah, you weaponized tariffs, President Trump. That was your mistake. You used tariffs as a weapon. And it did get ridiculous, to be quite honest. Now, the Supreme Court's ruling is correct. It's correct. Trump should have, from the very beginning, gone with a 10 or 20% tariff, a global tariff. It would have been simple. It would have been effective. It would have been easy to understand. He could have placed the tariff and then moved on to other things. But he created this whole Liberation Day narrative around tariffs, and then he just went tariff crazy. He went tariff bonkers. He used tariffs as a weapon. He used it as leverage during talks or negotiations. He used it to threaten countries, allies, adversaries. It didn't matter. Trump, in every Truth Social post or every other Truth Social post, he was threatening someone with tariffs if he didn't get his way on certain issues or certain talks that were taking place. I don't like what you're doing, Japan, tariffs. I don't like what you're doing, EU, tariffs. China, tariffs. India, tariffs. I don't like the way you dress, tariffs. I don't like what you said to me, tariffs, 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 tariffs. It got so crazy that other people were handing out tariffs. Lindsey Graham was handing out tariffs, secondary tariffs on China, on India. If you trade Russian oil, tariffs, tariffs. Everyone was throwing around tariffs at everybody else. It was a tariff food fight. It just got crazy. It got absolutely crazy, out of control, completely out of control, his tariff policy. It got so ridiculous that we were talking about 500% tariffs. China, 1,000% tariffs. Yeah, the Supreme Court is right in their ruling. But what Trump should have done from the very beginning is just a 10 or 20% tariff. And you know, it might have been, it probably would have been effective. It probably would have brought industry back to the United States. And it would have been simple and easy and fair. And no one would have complained. No countries would have complained, really. And he could have moved on to other things, right? Nope. He couldn't control himself. He could not help himself. And then everyone around him went crazy with tariffs. So that was the Supreme Court ruling. But he could be facing, the United States could be facing $150 billion in tariff refunds. I don't think that's going to happen. But the Supreme Court, in their ruling, they did not bring up the $150 billion in refunds. From my understanding of things, those are going to be handled by a lower court if there is a case that's brought up against the United States because of this Supreme Court ruling and a certain country wants a refund. Then that's going to be handled in a lower court. So the Supreme Court didn't even get into the issue of refunds. Lutnick, they say that Lutnick, his kids, who are now running, I believe Cantor Fitzgerald, right? They allegedly, what they did is that they bought up the refund rights before the Supreme Court ruling at 25 cents on the dollar, anticipating that the Supreme Court would rule against Trump. So they bought it up cheap, and they could be facing quite a big windfall from this ruling, maybe, if this story is correct, if this reporting is correct. 25 cents on the dollar. That is what Lutnick's sons, who he appointed to take over his bank, were betting the tariffs would be struck down and buying up refund rights at 25 cents on the dollar. Wow. So as Trump was speaking to the media after this Supreme Court ruling, he said, and I quote, "I am allowed to cut off any and all trade. I can destroy the trade. I can destroy the country. I'm even allowed to impose a foreign country destroying embargo. I can do anything I want to do to them. I'm allowed to destroy the country, but I can't charge a little fee." That's what he said. Donald the Destroyer. Donald the Destroyer. I can destroy a country, but I cannot impose a little fee. He's kind of right about that. In a weird way, he's kind of right. He can blockade countries. He can capture presidents of sovereign nations. He can impose illegal sanctions. I think sanctions are bullshit as well, but that's a whole nother story. Anyway, go to war. Go to war whenever he wants. Move aircraft carriers wherever he wants. But he can't impose a little fee, is what he was complaining about. Not quite all-powerful, Donald the Destroyer. What a quote from Trump, huh? So Trump, as he was also, as he was speaking to the media, he also said that, he said that he was the one that put al-Jilani in place as the unelected president of Syria. That is what he admitted at this press conference. The president of Syria, who I essentially put there, is doing a phenomenal job. He's a rough guy, not a choir boy. But then he went on to say that Syria needs a rough guy. But according to Trump, Syria is doing well. Last I heard about Syria, it was a mess, broken apart, fractured, a complete freaking mess. And yeah, al-Jilani is no choir boy, President Trump. He's an ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda terrorist, or he was, according to the FBI. He used to have a $10 million bounty on his head, but not anymore. Now he wears a suit and a tie, a very expensive suit and a very expensive tie. Trump was also asked about Europe and whether he despises Europe and the European elite. And Trump's answer was that the European elite, they've gone woke. Europe has gone woke and he doesn't like it. I don't like it. I don't even know what this is. What is this? Must be for the dogs, I think. I think this is for the dogs. I don't know. Anyway, he said that Europe is woke. Not all of Europe. Hungary, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Poland. He said they're doing okay. They're not woke. But he said the rest of Europe is woke. Europe has gone woke. Europe is not recognizable. When you go into so many places, not all countries, you look at Hungary, Poland, Czech, Slovakia, there are some countries that have gone very much the opposite. Trump urged Europe to become strong again. Tough love, the globalists in Europe just haven't realized it yet. It's tough love, Macron, Merz, Starmer, Ursula. Trump is not angry with you because he dislikes you. He's angry with you because he loves you. He wants you to do better. He wants you to become stronger. So anyway, that was his comment there. And then we have Iran. And then we have Iran, the big story, which is a most likely war with Iran, according to both Reuters and Axios, the United States, the Trump administration, they are looking at targeting Iranian leaders in order to get a regime change. Axios has an article with the title, Trump's Iran Options, Token Nuclear Enrichment to Taking Out Khamenei. Token nuclear enrichment. Or take out the supreme leader. That is not going to work out well for the United States if they did that. But that appears to be the plan. Axios said that Trump has not made a decision, though the option is there for him to go after the leadership. But he still has not decided what he's going to do, and he can decide at any moment. Everyone is ready. Everyone is getting ready. Iran is ready or getting ready to try and absorb the attack, the blow that is coming. My understanding is that the United States military is pretty much in position, or will be in position any moment now. And everyone is waiting to see what Trump is going to do. He said 10 days. That was the timeline that he put in place. Iran has 10 days to make him an offer he can't refuse. And that is exactly what Trump is saying, according to Axios. In order to avoid a war, Iran has to make him an offer that he cannot refuse. Mafia. Mafia foreign policy. Here is a post on X from Barak Ravid of Axios. President Trump will be ready to accept a deal that would be substantive and that he can sell politically at home. If the Iranians want to prevent an attack, they should give us an offer we can't refuse. The Iranians keep missing the window. If they play games, there won't be a lot of patience, the senior official said. An offer he cannot refuse. An offer he can take to the American people and save face. That is what Axios is reporting. What Trump is really saying is that he wants Iran to not only give up nuclear enrichment, zero nuclear enrichment, but also give up their military deterrence, their ballistic missiles. That is what Trump is demanding of Iran. Anything other than that, and Trump, if he were to accept any other deal, he would just be accused of being weak and of going back to the JCPOA, agreeing to a deal that is what the JCPOA was, and worse, that is what he will be accused of. Instead of the Europeans monitoring Iran's uranium, it would go to a third country, and most likely that third country would be Russia. So politically, Trump is unable to accept anything other than complete disarmament from Iran, which is never going to happen, because if Iran completely disarms, if they were to give him a deal that he cannot refuse, we completely disarm, Trump would say, okay, that's a deal that I cannot refuse. Why can he not refuse a complete disarmament if Iran was to offer him that? Well, because the moment Iran completely disarmed and gave up all of their ballistic missiles, they would be attacked. They would be regime changed, and it would be easy. It would be a walk in the park for the United States, for Israel, for anybody. It would be very, very easy to regime change Iran the moment they gave up all their weapons. So that would be an offer that Trump would be unable to refuse. So the foreign minister of Iran, he was giving an interview to MSNBC, and he said that Iran is going to present a framework deal to the United States in 2 to 3 days. We had very good talks a few days ago, Arachi said, adding that the two sides agreed on a set of principles or guiding principles for our negotiation and how a deal can look like. Arachi said the next step was to present a draft to his American counterparts. I believe that in the next 2 to 3 days, that would be ready, he said, noting that another meeting might be needed to work through the text once it is exchanged. So that's the message from Arachi. 2 to 3 days, and you're going to have some sort of a draft, a framework, not a deal, but something will be presented to the United States, and that will be the framework that negotiations can then build off of. That's not going to be enough. I don't think that will be enough, but hopefully it is enough. You know, hopefully Trump finds the courage to agree to continue negotiations. Not going to happen, but we can hope. that he could find the courage to tell the neocons and Lindsey Grahams and all of these people, everyone around him, to buzz off. And he doesn't want to go to war, and he's not going to go to war, and he'll work off of this agreement. And if it means JCPOA, you go back to the JCPOA. The JCPOA was working. It was working. There was no problem with the JCPOA. It was freaking working. Why did you have to walk away from the JCPOA? Because you're the great negotiator in chief. You didn't like the fact that Obama had negotiated the JCPOA. You wanted to negotiate a better JCPOA to outdo Obama. So anyway, that is the situation with what will most likely be a conflict in Iran. It might happen tonight. It might happen tomorrow. My guess, if I had to take a guess, I talked about this a couple of days ago. I believe it'll happen after the State of the Union. For some reason, I can't see Trump starting a conflict a couple of days before the State of the Union. I can see him giving the State of the Union address, threatening Iran at his State of the Union, getting a standing ovation from both sides of the aisle, from Democrats and from Republicans. He's going to like that. I like that. I like it when they're standing up and applauding me. And then the weekend after the State of the Union, State of the Union is on the 24th, on Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday the 24th. Then I can see the United States launching an attack against Iran. If it doesn't happen next weekend, then that's good. That means that they've decided to, at least for the moment, to walk away from a strike against Iran and perhaps give diplomacy a chance. So since we're talking about conflict and diplomacy, let's talk about Project Ukraine. And Lekoblin Ver, he spoke to the French AFP. You see, Lekoblin Ver spoke to the French AFP in an exclusive interview, and his message was that Ukraine is not losing the war. That is what Lekoblin Ver said. Ukrainian President Zelensky told AFP on Friday that his country is not losing its war against Russia, has taken hundreds of square kilometers in a new counteroffensive, and that European troops should deploy right on the front line after any ceasefire. Yep. After any ceasefire, we got to get those European troops right on the front line, right there on the front line. Start deploying on the front line, European troops. That's Zelensky's message to the AFP. Ukraine is not losing. We have moved on to the affirmation strategy of war. Affirmations. If you say it enough times, it will manifest into reality. So Zelensky wakes up. He looks in the mirror. And he says, we are not losing this war. We are not losing this war. You say it 5 or 10 times. Kaya Kallas does the same. Ursula does the same. Alexander Stubb definitely does the same. He wakes up in the morning, goes to his mirror, and he says, Ukraine is not losing the war. Ukraine is not losing the war. Ukraine, and then it's going to happen, right? If you say it 10 times, that's how you win wars. Just say it enough, and it will become a reality. That's the strategy. And I think this time around it's going to work. I think they found their wonder weapon. Their wonder weapon was the book, The Secret, right? You know, the book that I'm talking about. That's their wonder weapon. Just say it, believe it, say it, and it's going to come true. So that's the strategy that is now being employed by Ukraine and the collective West. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that before the Munich Security Conference, Zelensky had a meeting of his closest advisors, his inner circle, Podolyak. Podolyak. Is Yermak in his inner circle anymore? Where is Yermak? Didn't he say he was going to go to the front lines, Yermak? Did he ever go to the front lines? No, he didn't. Anyway, he had a meeting of his inner circle, according to the Wall Street Journal, and Zelensky's message to his team was that the diplomacy had failed, the negotiations had failed. This is right before the Munich Security Conference, according to the Wall Street Journal, and that everyone should prepare for a 3-year war. That was his message. According to the Wall Street Journal, everyone in attendance was in shock. They could not believe what Zelensky was saying, a 3-year war. We can't believe it. They told the Wall Street Journal, but that was Zelensky's message. Prepare for a 3-year war, which is exactly the message that the Europeans are putting out there. The Europeans are pushing Ukraine and pushing Zelensky to fight on for another 2-3 years. What have we been saying on the Duran? What have I been saying on this channel? There is no doubt about it. The collective West, the EU, European globalists, the UK establishment, the US, neocons, the US deep state, parts of the Trump White House, I have no doubt about it. All of these people believe that Ukraine, if it could just fight on for another 2 to 3 years, 2028, 2029, 2030, sometime around there, if they could just continue to fight on, Russia's weak. This is what they believe. Russia is weak. The economy is weak. The military is weak. Ukraine fights on. They further weaken Russia, and then they can go in on the attack, and it'll be a cakewalk. That's what they believe. I have no doubt about it. This is their strategy. Ukraine, keep on fighting. Come on, another 2-3 years. We need you to fight for another 2-3 years to further weaken Russia. So then we can come in. It's crazy stuff, but that's the strategy. And it looks like that is what Zelensky is going to do. Of course, 3 years more of war means that he can remain in power for another 3 years. Martial law and no elections. So Alexander Stubb, he gave an interview the other day, the leader of Finland, Alexander Stubbity Stubb. And he also said that Ukraine is not losing. It's not losing, he said. It's not losing. I'm telling you right now, Ukraine is not losing. So if Alexander Stubb is saying it, well, then it must be correct. Anyway, Stubb was asked about the Economist article, which claimed that the United States and Russia were going to close in on a $12 trillion economic deal. This has already been confirmed as fake news, confirmed by Dmitriev. No less, he said, that's nonsense, it's fake news, that there's some sort of a $12 trillion deal. But the Neocon publication, known as The Economist, they reported this, and Stubb was asked about this deal. And Stubb said, how much do you trust a Russian business deal? That was the question. They promised $12 trillion. Russia's GDP is $2.5 trillion. I think the Russians are lying. So that was Stubb's answer there. He thinks the Russians are lying, even though they never said that they were putting together this deal. That was the neocon economist that was reporting this. Your guys, the guys that tell you what to do, Stubb, are the ones that reported on this deal. So anyway, that was the leader of Finland, who is, I have to say this, I think Stubb, because he is talking so much smack now about the conflict in Ukraine and how Russia is losing and how Russia is weak and how NATO is strong. He was asked about whether Europe can take on Russia, can defend itself. And Stubb said, absolutely, there's no doubt about it. Europe does not need the United States. It can take care of itself. Yeah, right. No, we can't. No, it cannot. But anyway, that's Stubb. I think that Stubb is auditioning for a position, a very, very top-level position in Europe, in the globalist architecture, perhaps to be the next chief of NATO, perhaps to take over for Ursula at the Commission, or who knows, maybe even to take over for Lagarde at the ECB. I don't know. I don't know what position he's eyeing, but no doubt about it, his goals are much bigger than Finland. That's why he's talking so much delusional smack. He's auditioning, everybody. He is auditioning for a globalist position and a very, very high up globalist position. And he'll probably get it too. You know, I think he'll get it because the stuff he's saying is so delusional that But the globalist elite are going to say, this guy is this guy's good. We like this Stube guy. He's crazy like us. So there are reports. Let's go this way. There are reports from Ukraine, the Ukraine side of things, the military side of things, where they say they used Flamingo missiles. Remember those Flamingo missiles? Yep, they used Flamingo missiles to hit the Votkinsk plant in Udmurtia, which is about 1,300, 400 kilometers away from the front lines, a far, far distance from the front lines. This is the plant that produces ballistic missiles like the Iskander, like the Topol-M, the Yars, the Iskander-M. My understanding is even the Oreshnik. And Ukraine claims that they used the Flamingo missiles to hit this plant. I have not seen the Russian Ministry of Defense talk about this or mention this. To be honest, a lot of the Russian Telegram channels, the military channels, are not saying much about this either. There are some channels on the Russian side which are talking about this. It does look like this plant was hit with drones and with ballistic missiles. Whether it was a Flamingo missiles, who knows? I don't even think Flamingo missiles exist. I think these are UK missiles, Collective West UK missiles that are being used. Actually, I'm pretty certain. I think most people are certain that there is no such thing as the Flamingo. What we're talking about is UK missiles, but it does look like this plant was targeted and was hit, and it's a far distance from the front line. We are getting reports that the Russian military is preparing a big strike, perhaps this evening, a very big strike into Ukraine that is going to happen this evening. So that's the news there. And we have the reports that during the vote for the $90 billion loan to Ukraine, which needs all of the EU member states to vote yes in order to give the $90 billion loan to Ukraine, that Hungary blocked this initiative. So Zelensky's not going to get his hands on the $90 billion, at least not just yet. A $90 billion loan, 60% or 70%, $60 billion of that money has to go to buying weapons, and $30 billion of that money goes to the Ukraine government in order to pay, allegedly, in order to pay salaries and pensions and just keep the state afloat, because Ukraine survives on money from the collective West. The entirety of Ukraine is dependent on the collective West, but $60 billion of that goes to purchasing weapons. So it'll go back to the MIC, the $60 billion. And as I've said many times, this $90 billion loan that member states are going to be on the hook for, Ukraine does not have to pay back this money. The only requirement for Ukraine to pay it back is if Russia loses the conflict and has to pay Ukraine reparations, then Ukraine pays back this loan. But no Russian reparations, then Ukraine does not need to pay back this $90 billion. So anyway, Hungary said no. Basically, Hungary's message was that we will not approve the $90 billion loan until you start up the Druzhba oil pipeline, which Ukraine is blocking. Here is a post from the foreign minister of Hungary, Mr. Szijjártó. We are blocking the $90 billion EU loan for Ukraine until all transit to Hungary via the Druzhba pipeline resumes. Ukraine is blackmailing Hungary by halting all transit in coordination with Brussels and the Hungarian opposition to create supply disruptions in Hungary and push fuel prices higher before the elections. By blocking all transit to Hungary through the Druzhba pipeline, Ukraine violates the EU-Ukraine Association Agreement, breaching its commitments to the European Union. We will not give in to this blackmail. Exactly right. I talked about this 2-3 days ago, that the reason that Ukraine is blocking the oil via the Druzhba is to punish Hungary and to give Orbán problems right before the elections in April. That's obvious. And Ukraine would not do this on its own. Ukraine and Zelensky have been told that that they should do this. That is my opinion. I can't imagine Ukraine doing this on their own, saying they're going to block oil via the Druzhba. They get paid for the money, right? My understanding is that they get revenue from transit fees via the Druzhba. So why would they block this revenue stream unless someone high above told them, you're going to block oil going to Hungary, because what we need to have happen is we need to help the opposition defeat Orbán. And so we need to put pressure on the Hungarian economy, drive up prices right before the election so that we can be rid of Viktor Orbán. Of course, Szijjártó and Orbán, they understand this. And so they have now put a block on the $90 billion. And the reports are that if the Green Goblin does not get $90 billion by April, then he is completely bankrupt. Well, they're already bankrupt. They're effectively bankrupt. But no money means no salaries, no washing machine spinning. They also blocked, Hungary has also blocked the diesel fuel, which a lot of the military weapons need that diesel fuel. So that has also been blocked. And Slovakia has also blocked diesel, and Slovakia may block electricity as well. So we do see Hungary and Slovakia retaliating. But if they start up the Druzhba, if they start the oil up from the Druzhba, then Hungary's going to approve this loan. And then you know what's going to happen? Ukraine's going to shut down. Once the loan is approved, Ukraine's going to shut down the Druzhba again. That's exactly what's going to happen. Anyway, let's do a clown world and we can wrap this video up. Yeah, Ukraine's going to be a real good member of the European Union, huh? They're already going after Hungary and they're going after Slovakia. Real good member of the EU. EU solidarity and unity right there, everybody. So in today's clown world, what can I say? What can I say? It is once again a Kaya Kallas segment. And she doesn't even have to say anything. She doesn't have to say anything. She doesn't have to do anything. She's transcended clown world. She's transcended this entire segment of my videos. She's reached the level of myth, a mythos, because she didn't do anything per se for her to be mentioned in today's clown world. But what happened is that Medvedev, he was chairing a meeting in Russia and he was asked about Kaya Kallas and the concession list that she has put together and that will be presented to EU member states, or is or has been presented to EU member states. And this is the list of concessions that then the EU will make of Russia, the demands for Russia's capitulation. They were presented to Russia, allegedly. And Medvedev's reply to this was, you mentioned Kaya Kallas, and who is she? Even colleagues do not communicate with this person. Foreign ministers of many EU countries don't talk to her, not to mention the US Secretary of State. He doesn't even know who that is. He's not wrong about the Secretary of State part. He's not wrong about that. It's odd that you have the The top diplomats of the EU cannot get a meeting with the top diplomat of the United States. Isn't that odd? Isn't that strange? Very strange. But that was Medvedev's comment when he was asked about Stunning and Brave. So that's the video. I will wrap it up there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch, and check us out on Substack. I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.